Harry's Razors. Harry's.com. You can find all of that good stuff that we've been talking about for months and months and months at Harry's.com. You get a $5 off your first purchase at Harry's.com if you use the code TRN.
There's no better deal than the Truman set, Scott. I mean, really, for $10 delivered to your doorstep, you get the best blades, three of them, a handle, some gel. You're not even helping me out here, pal. There is a little gap between each of my words, so you can just kind of submit just a little bit.
I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for you.
I'm like my hands out, reaching out, and you're just watching me gulp for air. And so it's just the best shaving stuff available.
It is. And one of the things, that it's a great value, but the best part about Harry's that I love are those blades.
Well, Scott,
I don't cut myself anymore, and it gives me a close shave. I mean, isn't that why you buy a razor? Well, to get a close shave?
You know what I like best about it, Scott?
What's that?
Is the case that goes around the blade. Of course you love the blades the best. That's why it's a Harry's.
That's why you buy a shaver, is so that you can get a close shave without cutting yourself.
Every time, go to harrys.com, get yourself the Truman set, which is a standard $10 right to the doorstep. Fantastic. Treat yourself.
The only way you can get it for $10 is entering that code TRN at checkout. Tailwind Nutrition. You know, if you haven't tried it, the best way, there's two ways, really, two best ways to try Tailwind.
Put some in a bottle. Steal your friends. Which is it, Scott?
Your friends got to have some. But they have a stick pack bundle. It is all seven flavors. You get a package of all seven flavors for $16.
Yeah, that's good. You get to find your favorite. I know my favorite, and that's the green tea.
Yeah.
It tastes so good.
And I got to say, it's probably my favorite, too.
Yeah.
And I was very reluctant to agree with you.
You're not a green tea drinker, but it's just
it's a really good flavor.
It tastes green.
It tastes green.
If you've ever tasted green, and I'm not talking about, you know, chewing on ink pens or anything.
Do what most runners that have tried and found out for themselves. Go to tailwindnutrition.com and try it out. You got to try it out. If you try it, you may like it.
And there's a lot of people running with it now, and there's a reason for it. And it's really fun to come across some people that you've never met before, and you find out, hey, you're drinking the good stuff.
If you have GI distress when you're out there training and racing, try something new. Try Tailwind Nutrition. Go to trailrunnernation.com, click on the partners page, and you'll see Tailwind Nutrition.
Ladies and gentlemen of the worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
This might be one of the most interesting podcasts ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing. There's a bunch of like old brothel hookers like buried out here.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I do own my own bar. every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
You record this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything.
Well, good day, Warren Poole.
Hey. Good morning, Studio G. How is it there?
Fabulous. How are you?
I am most definitely awake, and last time I looked out the window, there's still some of London left at the moment.
What is that your shirt says?
This is the Grimaldi Pizza Joint just off the Manhattan Bridge on the Brooklyn side. Highly recommended if you were looking for a romantic soiree on your wedding anniversary, because if you say it's your wedding anniversary in Italian, you might get a free T-shirt.
Can you say that in an Italian, Warren?
No, but I have Erica who does that for me.
Do you know any Italian? I never even asked you.
He does. He does.
Do you know Italian?
He could speak Pequito.
Pequito.
I have some Italian. Let's say my bedroom Italian is better than my conversational.
I think that's the only Italian that Erica is interested in.
That's great. I love it.
How's it going there today?
Very, very good.
I like your little video of your finger puppet throwing up. That was hilarious.
We're building a theme, you know, giving various things the finger. So that
did
one's
you see that?
Stubborn.
Yeah, yeah, I saw it too. I'm waiting to see the next finger.
There's more of those coming. That's Erica's finger, and all special effects are done by her.
Very good. And you know, as far as the expense on the finger, I mean, what do you have to pay a finger?
Well, the problem is, you know, the finger initially said it would do it because it wanted to support the cause. And after one video, it's now got an agent who wants
holding out for a better contract.
Wouldn't you figure? Wouldn't you know? Hey, I love the hat. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's been doing some good service, you know. It's been out on some great British trails today. You'll be seeing those populating our social media channels shortly.
Yeah, Scott, we need to get some more hats.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
And Warren, we have some new swag coming direction. Oh, man.
You'll be getting a care package
here
soon.
I'm going to get it tomorrow at noon. I'm going to go pick them up.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm excited already. I mean, if you wanted to save on the postage, we'll be back soon. But otherwise, I should be sleeping next to the letterbox for the next month.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't take a month, but I will share with you that it's raising the bar on all swag here to now.
Here to four.
I was going to say, it didn't seem right. All right, let's do our thing.
I like
Sounds good to me.
Before I go out on the trails,
you've got to give me a
while
little bit
I'm
of,
out on the trails.
You've got to give me a little gap, Scott.
Okay, sorry.
Your editor needs a little bit of go.
You know, before I go out on the trails, I like to do a little shake.
What is? We've talked a lot to Dr. Cucuzzella about doing some pre-warm up. Is that what you're talking about, Scott?
I'm talking about shaking it 33 times.
Okay.
I get out there; it's all in the hips. I just kind of do a little chit 33 times, and I'm ready to go.
That's when we stopped running together.
Is that what 33 shake is?
No, but we do have one of the co-founders, Warren Pohl, 33 shaking it, and here to give us our wrap up, our final report on his tour through America. As he spent a number of days, 88, I believe, as he spread chia through and glee and good cheer throughout the United States,
and we hear that it was a great success. Is that true, Warren?
It was beyond anything we could have hoped for. If we could have if someone had promised us those results at the beginning, we would have signed up to that in a heartbeat. No, it was really one hell of an adventure, bringing 33 shake to the U.S., so much so that all plans to return with another product and a little bit more of our range have been brought seriously forward.
Oh, fantastic. That's good. And as tradition has it, since we've done this more than one time, Warren has given us 3.3 observations of two Europeans in a minivan traveling aimlessly through the United States.
We do. We have, I mean, the observations were many and varied, and I wanted to kick off on the absolutely vital to all trail runners subject of skateboarding.
Now, how does skateboarding and ultra running and 33 shake, how do those dots connect?
They intersected because everywhere we went, there were skateboarders. It's a popular means of transport across the U.S. People use them in cities. It's not age dependent. It's not sex dependent. You know, men, women, young guys, old guys, kids, skateboard. Just it's a cool way to get around. And what do you know? It flows through the American DNA beautifully. Much like your trails flow through your country beautifully. There you go. There's an awesome, seamless
well
link
done.
For you there. Not forced at all. And but because this flows, you see, I grew up clearly in the UK, and we got skateboarding in the 70s, and I became a severe addict to skateboarding through my younger years. And I thought, you know, we got some pretty good skateboarders here. We got a cool scene. It's got roots. You know, we're like a sort of smaller version of the US. And then I come to the US, and here is the big difference, okay? If you're in the UK, walking through a city and you hear a skateboard sound, let's say, you know, the tap of a tail, the screech of some wheels, and then that silence as it all leaps into the air, and you turn around, 9 times out of 10 you will be confronted by someone lying on the floor next to a skateboard. it just the finish is not what we have, whereas because you guys just do it that much better, what do you know? In the town, you're walking around, or maybe you're running around the city, and you hear that tap screech, and you turn, and someone just kind of knocks out an awesome trick, slides across a rail, spins their board under their feet, lands, and happily carries on to their business meeting or their next trick or wherever they were going. You do it so much better than us. It really makes British skateboarding look really, really clumsy.
Do they do some grinding there in the UK?
Well, now there's a topic, because yes, in the skateboard sense, we certainly do grinding. There's an app you may be aware of that shares a similar name, and that would be a subject for another podcast.
Another podcast, yes. we're trying to keep our ratings.
Yeah, we do all of that stuff, but we just learn so much traveling around in the US. You do it so much better. You know, something got lost in translation, and kind of the bit where you actually land the trick and finish it, that hasn't come to the UK yet.
Yeah, it's on its way. You know, the good things take time.
Fingers crossed.
We're in the heat of the summer, and there's a lot of people out there heat training, running in some pretty hot races. Your number two has something to do with climate control.
Absolutely it does. Now, you know, and very relevant to ultra runners, and maybe why American ultra runners are so strong, because, you know, in an ultra, you will be running often through the night. You could be running at altitude. You could be running from high to low, low to high, whether it be the heat of Death Valley or the canyons of Western States or mountains of Hard Rock and other places. The temperature will change a lot. And a good job you're prepared for it, because, heavens, the temperature in your country changes a lot. Let's say it's summer, so it's hot outside, you're wearing lightweight clothing, you're like, oh, it's a nice day, but it's baking hot, I need a cold drink. Let's go into the store. Oh my God, it's about 40 below. Who left the air conditioning stuck on? Absolutely bloody freezing. It's a challenge to get to the drink chiller in time before you go down with hypothermia and get out again, where you gratefully throw yourself upon the hot tarmac to warm up. Surely climate control should be about control, not about it's roasting outside, let's freeze them like penguins on the inside.
We like extremes here in the United States.
It is true. My wife, anytime we go to a movie, if it's 110 degrees outside, we go to a movie theater, she brings her parka.
She's a smart, smart lady.
You can never be too prepared.
So you ended the tour on the East Coast, and you made an observation about Maryland.
Maryland. Now, I would have called that Maryland, so I guess I got that wrong. I need to roll it together a bit more. Maryland. Is that better?
Maryland, yes.
Maryland. Okay, Maryland. You have to excuse me. Before visiting, I only knew it as a brand of cookie. and when we got there, Maryland is clearly suffering financially. So if you have a dollar, do send it down there. They clearly need it. And the sign that really brought it home to us, we stopped at the first rest area, and inside the restrooms there, they can't even afford full-size restroom stall doors. literally, there's a row of restrooms, and the doors, they came up, they were like sort of miniature Wild West saloon doors, about, you know, half a meter off the floor, 3 feet off the floor, and it's kind of up to my sternum. And the result was you have guys in there going about their business, and clearly this involves sitting down and getting up, and the effect is really of a sort of row of badly timed jack-in-the-boxes all going off at once. Very, very strange experience, but I hope Maryland's financial crisis will be over soon, and that they will be able to afford full-size restroom doors.
So Warren, so I get the right picture of this. As you're sitting on the throne, and that's appropriate for England, as you're on that throne, can you actually visualize the person to your left and to your right? Can you encourage one another? I mean, where are we with this?
I think actually you've just conjured another image. It's the start gate in a horse race. Okay, so left to right is pretty clear. Forward vision, if you're sitting down and you're not too tall, then you can't see anything but the door. If you stand up just a couple of inches, well, you're going to be saying hi to everybody else in the restroom.
Now, what happens, you know, we have some people that are over 6 foot, you know, maybe, how about the guy that's 6'5"? I mean, he is clearly just for public viewing at that point, isn't he?
He's got a panorama.
He's going to be doing the kind of eyes over the parapet bit. You know, he's not going to need any periscope to see what's going on outside. Sunglasses would be advisable if you want to use the restrooms in Maryland and you're over 6'5".
It's almost worth the trip. So, go ahead, Scott.
The point three is related. I noticed that Warren has been making observations a lot about restrooms in America. So, point three is also toilet related.
You see, Scott, you used the word.
I did.
You know, and before anyone gets too much of a suspicious idea, you know, we had a lot of miles to cover, so, you know, we made stops, we saw a lot of rest areas. But this is it, the word toilet. It seems in America people do not go to the toilet, whether it's kids going potty or adults visiting the bathroom, going to the restroom, stopping in the comfort area, taking a comfort break. Nobody seems to go to the toilet. You must be busting over there, but I didn't see anybody with all their legs crossed, so it must be working somehow. But you look in all of those places, the restroom is honestly not that restful. There were no baths in the bathroom. The comfort areas, comfort was marginal at best, to be honest. But all of those places, they did have a toilet.
You know, one of my favorite metaphors is to go drop the kids off at the pool. Did you hear that one?
Yes, we did. And what do you know? No swimming pool. and no kids either.
And no kids. 3.3
observations from the United States from two of our favorite Europeans. We're glad that you came. We're glad that you educated the nation with the great 33 Shake gel. That is available at 33shake.com. If you haven't tried it, you need to. It's great. They're really lightweight. Even for, you know, backpackers, you take them, and all you do is you add water when you're ready to use them. You shake them up and wait for, 30 minutes, Warren? Is that right?
10 minutes.
Oh, 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
And, yeah, 10 minutes to prepare, and they're good for 24 hours after that.
And that's it's good stuff.
And great tasting. And that's one thing I really like about it. I'm waiting for the entire, just the meal plan, because I'm just going to commit myself to 33 days of just straight on 33 Shake product only.
There you go.
You should be careful what you wish for, Don, because there's an experiment we really should be carrying out.
Well, we'll get some volunteers soon. I might be a little bit preoccupied on something. I don't know if I just volunteered it.
So don't get behind, because we heard a little teaser that there may be an additional product coming to the United States from 33 Shake. So don't be behind. Try this gel. See if it works for you. It's worked for millions of people across the United States and the world, right?
I'm sure millions of seeds have been distributed, no doubt. And in closing, Warren, where is the 33 Shake Mobile?
The 33 Shake Mobile is at an undisclosed location in Jersey, where, again, trail running came to our aid. A good friend of ours who we run with a lot in the UK, he's originally from New York State, and was going home after 7 years in London. And what do you know, he arrived home 3 days before we left, at which point we said, hey, have you got a parking space? And bless him, he was too jet-lagged to say no. So it is there waiting for our return very shortly, because, you know, even though we struggled to find toilets, and even though Maryland was in the grip of financial crisis, and even though we realized Brits can't skateboard and all of those things, we had such a great time, met so many great people, and just the immersion we got in the country you have there, and particularly the people who are in it, was just, it was off the charts, which is why we really can't wait to get back.
So it is not going up for sale as of yet?
It's not, no. I think it will be going up for sale on the West Coast in a few months' time after it has performed its return journey duties. It was too good to let go just now.
So, Nation members, save your money. Get ready for the bidding war to begin at the conclusion of the 33 Shake Tour.
And you may be able to find a few spare sachets under the seat.
Yeah, I'm sure. In the glove box somewhere.
Satchels.
Satchels all over that place. And you'll need to be able to, we'll probably auction it off by doing a sort of 33 Shake Cha-Cha Hula contest type thing.
Fantastic. And a discount code is available still for Trail Runner Nation members, Warren?
Absolutely, it is TRN33. Gets you 10% off your orders at 33shake.com. Go and get your Chia Gel now.
Awesome. We'll talk to you soon. Hey, thanks, Warren. That was fantastic. We have to jump on with our next person,
Victor Ballesteros.
We're going to talk about pacing.
Ooh.
You're going to love it. His insights are amazing.
They're really, really good.
I need some of those because the only pace I have at the moment after 3 months on the road appears to be really quite slow.
That's because you ran with us. Well, we're going to jump on that call. We can't wait to see you out here when you're out here again. And we'll do some more podcasting coming up.
Yeah.
Absolutely love to. Guys, it's wonderful as ever to catch up. Know you got to go. Have a great day there and speak to you soon.
Awesome.
Thanks,
Warren.
Thanks so much, gents.
Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I am Scott Ward.
And I'm Don Freeman. And today we bring on Victor Ballesteros. That's a name that you know from Victory Sport Design. Those awesome, cool bags that are out there along the trail for your
drop bags.
For your drop bags. He is the originator of that. If I was running with you and all of a sudden Victor was behind us and I would say, oh, I want to introduce you to my friend Victor. He is an amazing guy. He has not only invented these bags, but he has run Tahoe 200. He has hammered the 100-mile run. He has done a fastest known time attempt around Lake Tahoe. He is in a band called Voodoo Switch. This guy is the original do-everything guy, and this is who he is.
How many hats do you own, Victor?
Oh, my God. Quite a few.
And not only that, he's fast. He's a fast runner, which is very cool. And he is. You work at San Francisco Running Company, true?
I do. I like to joke that I'm sort of like the grandpa who sits in the front porch and tells old war stories to everybody who comes by.
Well, that's my job there.
That's
an important job.
Speaking of war stories, I ran into Victor at the finish line of Western States 100. A few weeks ago, and we started talking. He was there helping one of his friends. He was pacing someone, and we just started talking, and he started talking about pacing. And I said, you know what? We need to get Victor on the podcast and talk about pacing. We've done a couple episodes before on pacing, but I think that he brings some refreshing ideas and some golden knowledge to the idea of pacing.
Welcome to the podcast once again, Victor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you guys for having me again. It's a pleasure to be joining with you on the airwave here. I was with Stephen Wasather, another up-and-coming runner who also works at the San Francisco Running Company. And in my opinion, Stephen is probably one of the most underrated runners out there right now. He is got a number of really fantastic finishes, especially in the last year. And he got a ticket into Western States. I want to say it was at Sean O'Brien, maybe,
mm-hmm.
That he picked up his ticket in. But he amongst a ton of other really fantastic athletes, were just looking to run a spectacular Western States. It's interesting that this year, the race really clobbered a lot of clobbered everybody, but especially of note was a lot of the front runners got clobbered, but they kept going. I was just thinking about the support that they get when they're out there, and I was sort of in my head curious to know whether or not, you know, how much of their ability to finish, even though they were getting just smashed out there, came from the support of their crew and their pacers, because it really does. This sport is really unique in that it takes a team to get the athletes from point A to point B. And more often than not, I mean, I hear about people who say, oh, I could never have done it if it wasn't for so-and-so who was pacing me and, you know, and my wife and my kids came out and helped, you know, during the daytime crewing. So it's a very underappreciated job that the crews and the pacers that they give. But I love doing it. And you were asking me about, like, what are some of the races earlier we were talking, and you asked me about some of the races that I've been doing. I think that I've been spending more time focusing on helping other people with their races, living vicariously through other people, but at the same time, feeling like it's a really, I don't know, it's an honor. Yeah. To be able to help someone get to their finish line. Yeah.
So one of the things that in preparation for this, Victor wrote an article, I don't know, how many years ago was this? Was this recent or?
It was, I think it was last middle of last year.
Okay.
After I had, I'd done enough pacing and crewing that I really, actually, it started because I had a very friendly argument with someone about the proper way to pace.
Mm.
Well,
now that's the perfect argument and discussion to have. Let's open that up.
Yeah. I want to know what you were arguing and what this other person was arguing.
So they were saying that they would rather run in front of the runner that they were pacing, kind of the way that a pacer at a track meet paces, kind of pulling them along. And I felt that you really should, a distance event is totally different than a short track event. And you really need to run behind your runner so that you can see what they're doing, see what they look like. You're able to check in with them. And motivationally, you can still push them along if you have to, just by being able to see the full picture in front of you. So yeah, that was the crux of the disagreement. Like, do you pace from the front or do you pace from the back? And I've actually seen in a lot of ultras, people pacing from the front, and you know, and maybe it works for some people, but I think that going from behind is that being able to see your runner is, you're going to do yourself and them a better job. So that was the
Victor, have you ever had a runner that you were pacing that asked you to run in front?
No, because I usually I discourage them from that.
Okay.
Hey, so let's back up just a little bit and let's talk about when it might be in the shorter distance an advantage to have a pacer up front. Let's defend that other position for just a moment before we toss it to the side.
Before we totally trash it.
Yeah. So you referenced a bit in the article, and go to victorysportdesign.com where you can find this article and read it, because I read it and it was just fantastic. I loved every bit of it. So when is it okay? What distance race, or when would it be appropriate to be up front?
When I think that there's no risk of your runner having such extreme fatigue that you're not, they're not taking in calories they need to take. Because sometimes you need to actually see them, whether or not, hey, have they taken something to eat in the last half hour? Have they been drinking? So, gosh, I would say less than a marathon. You can run in front of somebody for less than a marathon and pace them if you really, if it's a matter of them trying to run the fastest race that they can, and the point is for them to really key off of you and your speed, then I think that would be the appropriate time to pace from the front. But when you get into a race where extreme fatigue is an issue and that's going to set in, then that's when the tables change, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're done with that position then. Now let's get into pacing. You defined pacing as a change in flow of movement.
That was, yeah. First out of the article, that's what you said, and I was really impressed. Can you elaborate on that?
That same thing. You know, when you're going over an extended period of distance and time, the pace is going to shift. You know, you may need to slow down to eat something. You may slow down because terrain. I mean, there's a whole, you know, bevy of different things that are gonna shift the pace of the runner. So basically, being that person who's right there with them, being able to read all of that, being able to understand, like, is it okay that we're slowing down a little bit? Is it okay that we're speeding up? That, I think, is a huge mistake that some some folks have when they're pacing is to think that, oh, we're speeding up. Awesome. Keep up this pace, because depending on where you are at the race and, you know, at what mile, that could actually be a bad thing. And I think it's interesting sometimes that I've actually encouraged the runners to slow down. Mm-hmm. And in the end, the benefit was far greater. So it's funny that you brought up that simplified a definition that I put together, because how do I quantify all of these different things that are changing? It's a flow. It's a definite flow. And so that's the best that I could come up with in terms of giving it some kind of a definition.
Well, I think in a few short words, you nailed it, because one of the first lessons I learned about ultra running, and I'll mention the name of Dana Gard, who helped teach me that, was it's steady work when you're out there. It's just, it's obviously you go slower on the ups, faster on the downs, and you just kind of roll through the rollers, and you keep your work steady. And a good pacer, I believe you're right on it, is helps you with that flow. The flow is an inverse of what the profile of the race. Many times you're just taking what it gives you, and you have to fluctuate that pace and speed as you move through. And when the pacer starts thinking about that for you and knowing what is up ahead and knowing an aid station's coming up so you can kind of catch up there a little bit, or there's a good downhill coming up, and navigating that as a real captain of the ship, you're now flying for this individual and you're helping provide that direction, just not following the person along and picking them up if they fall and just encouraging them. You really know the course and you keep that flow consistent so their work is consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you have to wear a myriad, you know, a bunch of different hats when you're out, you know.
what hats are you talking about?
I was going to say, you know, I've seen different kinds of pacers. I remember the first time I paced somebody, mm-hmm. and it was just out there for a run.
Yeah.
And uh-huh. and I think that in Victor's article and what we talked about at the finish line at Western States, he explains those hats. Can you tell us what kind of hats a pacer should wear?
Yeah, I mean, so sometimes when I meet up with you know, a person that I'm going to pace, or I talk to them on the phone or whatever, we email, I'm always asking them, okay, do you want me to speak to you? Do you want to have conversations? And then I tell them that, you know, they may go in thinking that they want to have conversation, but I may decide, you know what, right now we need to be quiet. We need to just focus on what we're doing, focus on our breath. So, you know, even in the moment of pacing, I have to decide whether or not, is it time to like lighten the mood? Is there like a funny story I can tell them? And not only do I have to think, is there a funny story? I have to be very conscious of whether or not the funny story, it doesn't go into something that may particularly bring the moment down. Like my funny, when I was pacing Steven at States, I wanted to tell him about a bonk that I had at one point, which was, it was a funny story to me, but he was actually starting to bonk himself. So I didn't want to bring up, like, I didn't want him to think about bonking, even though it might have been a funny story. I was thinking, like, I got to think about something else. And then suddenly the temperature started to kind of shift in that section of the trail where we were at. So I'm thinking, like, okay, now I got to think about the weather and what's the weather going to start doing to him? How's his core doing? I got to start thinking, like, physically minded, you know, like, and his gait, you know, thinking like a therapist, giving him some motivation, you know, really kind of tapping into the fact that his mind was in a dark place. And rather than not say anything, I had to. So give him some motivation. What was that motivation I was going to give him? So was he eating? Was what he was eating serving him well, or did we have to shift it up? So yeah, in the article, the different things that I had said were your hats, were the storyteller, the coach, the motivational speaker, physical therapist, the mathematician, the nutritionist, the comedian, the weather person, the athlete, you know, so, and then to care for them. And I guess the last part of the whole, you know, bevy of hats was to be like a nurturing, like a parent. So when I get out there, I guess I kind of see it as like the runner is there, like that, that's my kid. And how would I want to take care of my kid who was putting themselves through something so physically demanding? It's a job. It's a tough job. And I think a lot of people underestimate how tough of a job it really is to do.
One of the things you wrote in there, and you put it all in caps, it's all about your runner.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the job of a pacer and it being all about the runner, because I think that's a great topic, and I'm prepared to submit some thoughts too. So when you wrote it and you put it all in caps, you did that for a reason. And what inspired the caps?
I'd heard a lot of horror stories from folks who either had friends pace them, and the friends didn't really understand that it wasn't about them having a vacation with their runner friend. Sometimes people don't really think ahead, and they just grab some pacer who's going to be in the area because they just don't think that it's as important as all of their training, which to me, I'm like, no, it's one of the most important things, as important as your training. And they end up with somebody who's not really focused on them as the runner. And it can really destroy everything you've put together. So I always stress to people who are saying, hey, I got to find a pacer. What do you think? You know, how should I go about it? I just tell them, ultimately, just make sure you're on the same page that your pacer is going to be there for you. It's not about them trying to get in some extra running miles because they have a race coming up 2 weeks later. It's not about them saying, hey, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to spend some time in the woods with my friends. It's about them. It's taking care of you. It's definitely, it has to be all about the runner.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned in the article that it's very important to have some information going in. Now, there are those circumstances, and we can get into that a little bit later in the podcast, where you may be standing at mile 72 of a 100-mile race in your shorts, and somebody comes in and they look like trash and they need a pacer. They didn't plan on a pacer, and you jump in. But let's, for the moment, step to the other side of that, and you've been asked to pace. And another phrase that you have in this article that I just love is you need to sit down and discuss the paper reality.
Right. You know,
What is paper reality, and how do you talk about that with your runner?
So, yeah, I also think that it's super important. Like, if you're going to pace, to be on the same page with them, with everything they've done, all their training, what they're going to do the day of the race. In a sense, I think that it's also really important to take the time to actually crew with them as well, because then you can really get a sense of where they're at throughout the day, especially if it's a longer, if it's a 100-miler. A lot of times a friend will say, oh, I just need you to pace me, so just show up, you know, to 10 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock. And I'm like, no, I'm going to be there for you. I can do a better job for you if I know what your goals are, the expectations of the day, what kind of pace have you been training with. So we look at the paper, which is their paces that they think that they're going to run, and I take all that into consideration when I finally meet up with them, because either they're on their A goal, their B, their C, their D. You know, maybe they've dropped all the way down to G, and so it's good to know all that stuff, because then you're that much more prepared to deal with where they're at, the reality of where they're at when they're running. I've had a couple of friends who I've paced that. We knew for a fact, hey, you're going to go into the race and you're going to be able to meet this particular goal. And then like a day before or 2 days before, they start to say, you know what? I think I can run about an hour faster than that. And I'm like, no, stick to your paper plan, and then let the day dictate what it's gonna give you. You know, if you suddenly halfway through you're flying, then okay, cool, we'll roll with that. But yeah, more often than not, that's the paper plan is far more realistic than, you know, what they end up trying to push on the day of. And so it's just good homework.
I'm going to go back to it's all about your runner for a second. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you, I feel, as a pacer, a solid pacer, is somebody that gets out there and really just is a servant to that runner, whatever it may be. It could be making sure that they're eating, making sure that you dream up something that might sound good to them. They may need to walk more than you ever have with them. That's okay.
It may be massaging the inner thigh a little bit higher than you would on a normal training.
For the record, Scott, it wasn't inner thigh. Okay?
Oh, was it outer? Okay.
Clearly just above the kneecap.
All I know is I was getting a little excited.
at 78 miles into the run, that's a pretty tall compliment. And so it really is about serving that person. And yeah, it's not like any training run you've done with them. It's not your race. This is about them. It's about a mission to get them through. And it's not about, hey, we're going to be out there for, you know, 10 hours doing just not very many miles here. It doesn't matter.
I want to throw this in, that's because I've seen this working at aid stations where a pacer will come in and let the runner do everything by themselves. The pacer comes in and starts eating and starts filling their own water bottles and taking care of themselves instead of taking care of the runner. I envision a good pacer is, before you get to that aid station, you have an aid station plan for that aid station, and you take their empty water bottles and you have them ready. Maybe you even run ahead a little bit to get those water bottles filled, and you make sure that the runner is taken care of first. And then as you're leaving that aid station, you grab some stuff for yourself.
Aid station management.
Yeah. So when you go in, I'm about just to take care of the runner as we're talking. And, you know, I think that the issue when you see somebody who's pacing, who goes in, doesn't really focus on the runner, starts grabbing a lot of their stuff, sometimes that's a symptom of you're a runner who grabbed a person to pace you who maybe is probably suffering a little bit as well themselves, which is always kind of like a dicey thing. So again, when you're going to pick somebody to pace, another reason to not just leave it up to fate is to make sure you're getting somebody who is just a little bit stronger than you are as a runner, because again, they're going to have to be thinking about a lot of, or they should be thinking about a lot of stuff. And if you get somebody who, gosh, they don't, you know, maybe they're doing 20 miles a week or whatever, and come day of the race, they're struggling to keep up with you, and they start thinking about, oh my God, I'm going to start to bonk, then you've really sort of defeated the whole purpose of having them there. So sometimes I think that ends up being the case for a lot of people who go out and will, you know, do a long event and get somebody to pace for them. They just choose somebody because it's their friend. You know, they're afraid to ask somebody else who is a stronger runner to help them out, which to me kills me. I always feel like, you know, so many people are out there who are willing to help you. It's such a giving community. It astounds me every single day that I think about it, what a giving community this running community we have is. And I mean, some of my favorite pacing duties have been with people who last year I ran with a friend who I met through by selling, you know, victory bags. And he just randomly asked if I could pace him for Tahoe. He's from Texas. So he does very little mountain running, if any. And I paced him for 50 miles of the race. And it was, it was like a walk in the park for me. It was no big deal. I didn't mind it. But I thought it was awesome that he asked me to help him, because I think in his mind he thought, oh my God, Victor, he could do this whole thing, you know, multiple times. But it was an honor to help him do it. It was one of the longest pacing duties I've ever done. God bless him. But, you know, he had a number of issues immediately, like out of the gate once I started pacing him. But we figured it out, and I was able to help him figure it out because I wasn't being taxed. It wasn't a big burden for me to be running. So kind of going, bringing it back to that whole aid station management thing. You know, when he really started having trouble, we would make a plan, get into the aid station, let me figure out what he's eating, let me figure out what are the things that he shouldn't be eating, and let's take some time. Maybe his time goals are slipping away, but that's okay. I mean, you know, you have to be able to say, you know what, it's fine. You're slipping to D goal, C goal. The point of this is, you know, to finish the race. And sometimes you have to like really check in with your runner too and say, what is this your goal, to finish this race? Sometimes it's okay for them if they're really in tremendous pain and they're not able to get any food in, if they're hurting, if they've actually hurt themselves, you know, to call it a day. But, you know, all that stuff happens at the aid stations, and you just kind of make it, you know, aid station to aid station, and being able to have all of your mental faculties together is important. So, yeah, big tip for anyone who's looking for a pacer and wants to do a big challenging course: get somebody who is going to be a strong runner for whatever period of time that they're going to be with you. It's so important.
And as you mentioned in the article, there's a great deal of enjoyment of not having to go out there and push real hard on that 50 miles. For example, you were able to go at more of a leisurely, less effort, and it's nice to see the trail on a slower pace. I mean, that so often we're out there trying to kind of push the envelope. It's nice just to take it in at a different speed, at a slower speed. It's enjoyable that way too, and we can get some benefit from time on the feet. How many times have we heard time on your feet? That's important, and you do get stronger from those slower efforts. And we've talked about that on the podcast plenty, about keeping the heart rate low, and there's great benefits from that. You're strengthening all kinds of musculature, and you're learning a lot of stuff too, how to manage whatever conditions in front of you that slowed your runner down. So it's like you said, community-based. It's what we do, and it's fun at any speed, and we shouldn't be bashful about asking Killian Jornet to pace us. It should be fine.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure he probably would do it.
He probably would. He might run circles around you as you're running just to keep entertained.
So, you know, I want to get back to the whole idea that, you know, there's a lot of responsibility on the pacer, and there's some responsibility on the runner to make sure that it's a right match. That because I remember one time when I offered to pace a runner for a short distance. It wasn't very long distance, but it was a short distance. And I had no business being with this runner. Even though this runner had many, many miles under her belt, I couldn't hang. And I had to tell her that at the first aid station we came to. I said, I can't hang with you. I'm holding you back. I'm a liability to you. And that was a really, really hard discussion to have.
She was carrying your bottles and your fuel belt, and
she was giving me a backpack ride into that aid station. It was a pace that I was not comfortable with, and shouldn't even have been there.
Yeah, that's the other side of the whole. Yeah, you know, the choosing of somebody to be with you story is that, as somebody offering to be a pacer, yeah, make sure that, you know, and that. I think that goes back to the whole, you know, get on the right page with them, literally like their paper on paper scenario. What are the paces they're expecting to run, and trying to get a good understanding? Okay, this is a hilly course. They're going to be running, 9 minute mile pace. To some people, they think, oh, 9 minute miles, that's not too bad. But you know, you throw it into the altitude, you throw it into, you know, heavy climbing, all of a sudden you may realize, oh shoot, that's much more than I'm, you know, able to handle over 15 miles or 20 miles. So yeah, then the runner is now, you know, at a disservice because, yeah, you're having a hard time keeping up with them.
Hey, we're talking a lot about the pacer responsibility. Let's talk about the runner's responsibility, because the runner has a little bit on them to manage and treat their pacer right too. So let's open up with that. Do you have any thoughts on that, Victor?
I think that it's okay to be cranky as a runner. Most often I've been very fortunate. I've never run with somebody who was so cranky that they would start to abuse you as a person who's out there helping them. I've heard stories about runners who did that, but I think that it's, as a runner, you should just always try to be aware of the fact that that person is out there helping you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yes, they're there for you, but you know, don't start throwing things at the runner. I mean, at the pacer. Don't start spitting at them. Don't try to punch them. You know, pretty basic stuff. I think it's much easier as a runner because quite often, you know, you're just there. You're just doing your thing. I think that it goes back to, I know we were talking about like what should the runner's responsibilities be, but I think that as long as the pacer is mindfully taking care of the runner will always, it's like they're fulfilling their job to their pacer by just simply running, being in the moment and running. And I think that's really, you know, they get on the same page with your pacer, let them know what you expect of them. But then once the day, you know, happens, you just sort of, you're in your mind, you're in your thing. And then it's back to being all about you.
Well, I'm right there with you, Victor. I think it's the runner's responsibility to speak to that pacer, to tell the pacer what they need. So the pacer isn't guessing. So the pacer isn't just asking questions over and over. Do you need this? Go ahead and communicate with your pacer. Right now I need silence. I need to run to this next aid station and not say a thing. Well, that's easy for me to do as a pacer. I'm just gonna shut up. I just need to be back here. That's all.
You know, and to that point, I think when you're racing with your pacer, I think it's okay. I think some of us have a tendency to not want to complain, you know, to say, you know what, these blisters on my feet are killing me, or my stomach is turning, and you don't want to necessarily complain about that. But I think it's the duty of the runner to let the pacer know so that they can help.
And start thinking through a solution.
Right.
Because you said one of the jobs is to be a mathematician, and we can't do some of that thinking. That's why we talked about simple rules. It's tough to try to sort things out with a number of hours on your feet, and a pacer could be that fresh look and a solution provider.
Right. Yeah. And as the mathematician, I think the point of saying one of the hats is a mathematician, a lot of times I'll have to start calculating, okay, this is our pace now. This is what we're doing. This was our goal. We can make it to X amount if we, you know, think about it in these time frames between aid stations, 5 miles from, you know, from this point to this point. What's our current pace? How long is it going to take? Do we have enough nutrition on us to get us from that point to the next point? It's crazy how much that there is to have to think about, and being able to go however long, you know, your runner wants you to be there for, and being able to be fresh enough to be on your toes. I think that's the most important thing, and if you're not able to do that, then that's going to be rough for everybody all around.
On that mathematician thing, I just have to throw this out because I've seen this happen too, where the pacer had no idea the mileage between the aid stations or the runner's expected pace, or even having a watch. I've seen that.
Yeah. Oh, a pacer not having a watch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just a watch. Doesn't even have to be a GPS watch. Just a watch so you can keep track of how long is it taking us to get from this aid station to this station. And as a runner, you're going, how many more miles to the aid station or how many miles between this aid station? I don't know.
Maybe that runner said, hey, pacer, take that watch off. I'm tired of hearing you read stuff to me. Just take it off. And you're criticizing, Scott.
It could have been.
It could have been the world's best pacer ever.
It could have.
So, hey, we're talking about the job of a pacer, to listen to the runner and to do what they said. You're a servant to them. But I want to turn the table and say, when is it time and when should you as a pacer push back and say, you know what? No. So what I guess what I'm really trying to say is there's a time that the pacer needs to be an anchor. It needs to be an authority figure to say, no way, I know your goals. We need to do this and we need to push forward. If you let the pacer, let the runner dictate everything, you might be making them a bed along the side of the trail so they could take a little nap. There's a time that you need to say, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. And the times usually when... You know, you have to gauge it, of course, everybody, you know, the situations are always going to be so, so varied. But in my experience, it's always been when you know that there's no physical issue going on with them, they're able to move, they're just really tired. And sometimes a very exhausted runner is going to think that I just can't go another step. And you know they can. So it's just a matter of saying, no, you know, we're going to keep moving here. We're going to, okay, maybe at one aid station, you can sit down for, you know, 30 seconds. And then we just get up. We just get up and we go. And it's amazing how willing they are to keep going if you just sort of keep that flow happening, rather than say, okay, no, you sit down and you sit for as long as you think you need. A lot of times I will dictate a certain amount of time depending on what looks like their ability or their status at the moment. I think the longest I've ever let anybody sit down was 10 minutes. And it served them well, those 10 minutes. So yeah, it was, it's hard to really say exactly, you know, like where and when do you, you know, put your fist down and say, no, damn it, we're moving forward. But,
you know, one of the things that you mentioned in your article, again, little snippets that I am going to hold in my pocket or my fanny pack, if you will, is, you talked about playing the goal game.
Ah,
can you talk about that? I think that rolls into what we're talking about right now. What is the goal game?
So you have what your runner has defined as this is the finish time I want to have. Here's my best case scenario, middle case, my worst case scenario. So sometimes you can just stay within the realms of what their scenarios were. But sometimes if you start to slip to the worst case scenario and then even further down, then you really have to have something in your pocket where you can say, okay, you know what? We're just looking for runners now. Let's see if we can see some headlamps. And when we see some headlamps, let's kind of like follow them. Let's push ourselves. Or we know that, you know, we've got this climb in front of us. Let's just focus on this climb. We'll do that climb. And then sometimes it's like, you know what? We're approaching the finish. I think we can do this in, you know, X, you know, period of time. Let's focus on that. Like starting to break up, I guess, is the way that a lot of people describe looking at, like, I'm gonna run to the next tree. So I'm gonna, you know, find a tree and I'm gonna make it to that tree. And once I get to that tree, now I'm gonna look at, there's a rock. I'm gonna get to that rock. You know, it's just like finding ways to break up the time so that it just passes that much easier for you. I mean, it is just, that's the game, the goal game.
Yeah, and one of the things the pacer has to do is be adaptive. You can't go in there just with one thing in mind. You pick up your
you pick up your patient, I mean your runner, as you see them, you know, whatever condition they're in. You're doing some triage. Like you said, you're doing some psychotherapy on them. You're putting a tourniquet on around their neck. You know, whatever you need to do to keep them going is your job as a pacer. This is not your race. It is their race. I know that Scott, after your Western States, handed me his medal, the medallion that goes around the neck, not his belt buckle. He holds that tight.
I keep the belt buckle.
Yeah, but he gave me that medallion that goes around the neck because he said I earned that as a pacer. And I thought that was very, very cool of him. And I cherish and hold that today.
Well, I would like to say, and Don's being very humble here, I would like to say that was my idea, but it was not my idea. Because Don Freeman did that to his pacer the first time he ran Western States. I got that idea. One thing that if you listen to Trail Runner Nation at all, is I plagiarize a lot. I take other people's ideas and claim them as my own.
I'm careful about my pre-show notes with Scott.
Hey, I have a question for you. This is a question that we've asked multiple times on this podcast, and I want you, Victor, to answer this as a runner, not a pacer, but let's say you're a runner and you're going to a course that you have never run before. Mm. Would you rather have a pacer that knows you or would you rather have a pacer that knows the course?
That's a great question. While you're thinking about that, whose question was that, Scott? Was that your original question, or did you plagiarize this one too?
Oh, I'm sure it was yours. At some point, you came up with this question many years ago.
So what do you think, Victor?
That's a pretty tough one. That's a really good question. I think I lean towards knowing the course.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, initially I would have said knowing me. But I think that I've been out on out to enough events where some course knowledge, if you don't have it, is like so much more important, because then that person can tell you, okay, hey, you know what, from here we've got a big climb, so prepare for that, and then we're going to drop down, quads are going to get beat up, big climb again, or it's going to be flat, or we're going to be on a road. I think it's to me, it's really helpful to have that stuff. If I can't get any sense of a course and I'm going to go run that event, that would be pretty helpful for me. But I have to say that that's a big mistake to go to an event and not know the course.
not even
to look at the website.
Well, you recently went to Italy, right? And ran, and so. If I went there and I linked arms with Scott and said, okay, Scott, we're going to go run this race, and we've never even been to Italy, but we're going to do it. I think that would be an exciting adventure until we missed a ribbon and missed a turn, and then it would become a nightmare.
It would be.
But knowing somebody that knew the course, then that would take a whole stress level down for me. I think I would run 10% easier in just feeling comfortable that, hey, well, at least we're on course.
You're not using your mental faculties to direct yourself.
Yeah.
You're using your mental faculties to assess yourself.
Yeah. I think I can manage myself better than I could manage a course. You know, I've been with myself my whole life. So I think I can do that until, you know, you lose your mind, and then you probably don't even know you're mismanaging. But I do not want to get lost in the middle of a course.
Yeah, I did do that at Tahoe 200. They didn't give us pacers until 100K, so 62 miles in, you didn't have any pacers, and I was a bit worried about how well the course was going to be marked, because I mean, number one, it was, you know, Candace Burt is a phenomenal race director, but it was the first time they were doing the event. There was a lot of areas where I knew they had some issues with trying to like navigate where the trail's going to go. So I just, hooked arms with another runner who I knew was maybe a slower runner than I was, but he knew the course because he had been out there for 2 months running it and studying it. And so I knew that I was in good hands if I just hung with him. And that was perfect. I mean, it worked out. So yeah, I definitely think that was a case of me wanting to be with somebody who knew the terrain as opposed to somebody who knew me, because we didn't know together very well. So,
you know, I have to agree with your assessment there, which I think raises the question or raises the importance. If you're a pacer, how important it is for you. If you've never been on the course, maybe you need to get out there and experience part of it. You need to at least know the elevation profile and the aid stations. You need to know everything there is or everything that you can get your hands on about that course, because it's your responsibility. It's still the runner's responsibility. But if a runner would rather choose somebody that knows the course more than knows you, that tells you how important it is for you to do your homework.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I think that that was, you know, one of the most important things in me putting together that the blog post about pacing, was to examine what are all the bits and pieces of information you have to be on the same page with, you know, runner and pacer, in terms of being able to help each other out. That's when I realized it's so much more work than a lot of people really, you know, think it's going to be. But yeah, if you do it all, if you're as knowledgeable about where you're going as your runner is, then I think that the success rate kind of, you know, goes up a few notches.
You know, one of the things that you and I talked about on the track and Placer High in Auburn, I want to ask you this question. You can start chatting about it. How do you motivate a runner that is not motivated?
Mm.
As a pacer, what do you do? That's up to the podcast. Go ahead.
So trying to give them the best motivation when a runner has lost everything, it could be so many different things, especially if you know the individual. You know, if you know the individual, then you've got a leg up because you can tap into something personal that they can relate to. Mm-hmm. I think that the thing that I always find myself really diving into when I'm with a runner who's really struggling or going through a dark patch is just to be very mindful and present. I know it may sound kind of like, oh, it's so zen-like, but, you know, really it's just about, you know, you are here, you are doing something amazing, and perhaps you're not in your best place, or you're not where you were hoping to be or expecting to be, but you're here, and you are doing something that's absolutely phenomenal. It doesn't really matter what the end result is going to be, but that we just keep moving forward and realize how strong you are as an individual. You know, the words don't always come out that way when we're on the trail, but that's essentially, in my mind, you know, the strongest power you can put out there to somebody who is feeling like crap. You know, they chose to do it. So, you know, you always have to keep that in mind, so that if they're going to start, you know, to complain about being out there, then you just have to say, hey, come on now. Really? Come on. You're here. You're in this moment. So you're doing it. I think that not being present, that tends to be the biggest mistake, that I think a pacer could make, for their runner. And for themselves too, is to not be present. And by not being present, I'm talking about like thinking about their own training, thinking about how they're going to get home. Or, I mean, those are all things that you should have figured that all out before you stepped onto the trail with, you know, the person that you're with. So yeah, I just being present as you can.
Yeah, on the topic of biggest mistakes that a pacer can do, I think is trying to take the reality that you talked about earlier. We talked about paper reality versus race reality, and trying to take that race and bring it back to the paper to say, okay, I'll catch you up. I'm going to be the pacer with a cape, and we're going to catch you up
over this next few aid stations, and that is a huge mistake. And all the intentions are there. Like, I want to help you and help you get that goal, and I'm going to be the runner that helps you. But that's a big mistake. You really have to take what you have and work with what you have.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And that's
being
one of the things.
The moment.
Yeah. There you go. That's plagiarism. That's what Scott does. You're rubbing off on me a little bit, Scott. I listened to Victor, and then I just kind of stated it in a few different words and took credit for it. What do you think, Scott? Biggest mistake.
You know, I have never seen this personally happen, but I know a runner. That
are you making this up?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I know a runner that has asked me
that they
want me to pace next year at Western States.
Ah.
And this runner a couple years ago had a pacer that verbally abused her.
Mm.
Just got on her and yelled at her to the point where she made the runner cry.
Yeah.
And I think that there's no place in that. You as a pacer need to be able to read the emotions. You know, to need to know when to push and when to back off.
When to hold them, when to fold them?
Yes, Kenny. Does Voodoo Switch have a cover for Kenny Rogers?
That would be probably the one cover we would do if we were going to.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about Voodoo Switch, because you guys are so cool and have such a cool sound. Tell us about that. And with your permission, if you have a little something we could put the end on this podcast, I would love to share a little Voodoo Switch with the people.
Yeah, it's a band that I've been playing with for a number of years. We've just and recently have broken onto the trail scene ourselves. We played at a number of different events. We played over at the Broken Arrow Sky Race recently.
Cool.
So that was a lot of fun, being able to play for folks who are part of the whole running community, get a different crowd, a different vibe.
So you played at the a finish line?
No, we actually played the night before the 50, I think it was a 52K, 26K. At the Trails of Motion Film Festival. So right before the Trails Film Festival, yeah, we played some, and then we played at like the intermission. It was fun, yeah.
Very cool. And what kind of sounds do you guys do with that band?
That's it's like a funk rock, bluesy kind of thing. Mostly funk rock though. It's all original. You guys can go to the Voodoo Switch website and check out some of the music. But yeah, we've been playing. We never really got together thinking that, like, oh man, we're gonna, you know, make albums and, you know, go on tour. It was just a bunch of friends who got together and were creative and wanted to play music. But somehow through all of our extracurricular stuff that we do with our lives, we've managed to still stick together and keep on writing music, and it's been fun. Yeah.
Yeah. You're playing for the right reasons, because you love it, and it sounds great. And I'm responsible for many of those downloads on there, Victor. I just want you to know when you check those numbers out, I'm big on a number of those.
You know, and we also want to just direct everybody to victorysportdesign.com. I'm sure you've seen them out at races. My personal favorite right now is the Bear 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so well organized. It's, if you haven't seen one inside and out, go to the website.
Drop station, drop bags.
Yeah, drop bags. Mm-hmm. Take a look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Drop bags, gear bags. You know, we're going to actually come out with a whole new line of bags by the end of the year that we're really super excited about. We're actually going to have a new color. I know there's been a lot of people who the only type of I wouldn't call it complaints, but you know, some feedback is a lot of people said, you know, they're all red. There are special windows in it so that you can identify, you can personalize your bags. And I don't think I've ever heard anybody say, I never was able to find my bag. But yeah, we're going to have some new colors. We're going to have a new size. We're going to have a larger pack, which is going to be a travel pack. You can do some fast packing in it as well. It's got a really unique design that we're going to try to patent as a design patent for it, because it's so unique in terms of it reduces the bounce of the bag if you do run with it. It's not a race bag. It is definitely a travel bag. But yeah, we're really stoked, and we're going to actually soon, very soon, we're going to do a Kickstarter for that particular bag. It's called the Grizzly, and we're going to, yeah, be putting that out there. So if anyone's listening, and once we do that, you know, keep your eyes out for that announcement for the Kickstarter, because that's going to be really huge.
Yeah, Victor, I saw that bag out at Way Too Cool. You had them on your table because you had a vendor booth there, and it looked like a bag for a business person or a traveler doing a 2 to 3 day trip. But all of the great qualities of the drop station bag, you actually have in a couple 2 to 3 day travel bag that you can go put in the overhead compartment, and everything is there. When you open up that bag, here's what I need. It's just super fast and amazingly organized.
Yeah, and I was really a funny little story. So I had to go overseas to the factory that we're making all the bags at. And in customs, I was probably like record time through the line, and the guy there looked at the bag and just one look, and he saw everything in it, and he goes, "Oh, well, you're done." And then he asked me, "Where did you get this bag?" And I said, "Well, nice. I made it. So meanwhile, everybody else, you know, was spending like, you know, 2, 3, 4 minutes having their bags gone through, and I just sort of, boom, you're done and you're gone. And it was just because of just that organized aspect of the bag. But yeah, it's been a fun journey. And and again, you know, we're going to have a Kickstarter for it coming up, and so we're really looking forward to that. And just looking forward to expanding the product and the concept beyond run-centric products. You know, obviously we started off because I was doing ultra events, and I wanted bags that, you know, my wife Jenna could help crew with and keep things organized and have, you know, not have to think so much about where everything was. But, you know, creating a company, you really need to have a broad audience. So that was one of the goals that we really kind of put together early on, was we wanted to grow in a direction where that super duper organized capacity and the durability of a product had further utility than just running. I mean, you can still use them for running. We actually had a bunch of people, some folks using the bags at Western States as crew bags, which was awesome to see. But yeah, you can take that thing on a trip, and that's, you know, it's all you need. No more, you know, no more bulky suitcases and stuff like that.
To your overseas story, there's your marketing spot right there. We're going to have to get Billy Yang Films and get you to do the going through the customs, and you just moving through in 15 seconds, and everybody else going through their stuff, throwing out underwear and doing all kinds of stuff, trying to figure out if they can get through. And so I think that will move Kickstarter.
Yeah,
Victor.
Yeah.
Victor Ballesteros, you are a wealth of information. Truly a Renaissance man. You voodoo switch. You're building. You're doing the American dream as an entrepreneur. You're racing 200-mile races. You're crewing and helping and pacing and writing now as well on your Blogspot. And we really do appreciate you coming on and sharing that knowledge.
Thanks. No, I always appreciate, and it's always an honor to be able to ask to come out and spin my stories, as I like to say.
So if you want to meet Victor in person, go to the Voodoo Switch website, and or you could go to San Francisco Running Company.
He's the guy sitting out front spinning stories.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
So go out and run, Moss.
Gonna make it bread. That's where I count my blessings. my bag for shoes as I was heading out for the door. I didn't have any room to go to the little tiny rose popped from the thorns. I tried to hold the flower, but my hands could not embrace. Here I thought I was a giving kind till the rose held me up to my face. I give it all away. I'll give it all away. Yeah. When I found some good to take, last thing I do is go make it break out. I give it all away. Yeah. I give it all away. When I found some good to take, last thing I do is go make it break now. I say, nobody take from you what they don't plan on giving back in spades, no. Don't ever try to be the taking kind unless you plan on putting some back up on the plate. Nobody ever said life was easy or that we would never make mistakes, no. All the blessings that I got to count were all the blessings that I got from a leap of faith. Give it all away, I'll give it all away, yeah. When I found some good to take, last thing I do is go make it break. Now I give it all away, I'll give it all away, yeah. When I found some good to take, last thing I do is go make it break. Now I give it all away, I'll give it all away, yeah. When I found some good to take, last thing I do is go make it break. Now give it all away, I'll give it.